Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Ari Squire. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Ari Morrison Squire was born on November 10, 1968, and lived in Lake Barrington, Illinois. This is 41 miles northwest of Chicago. Ari took a job working in a behavioral health center that was owned by his father. While working there, he became romantically involved with the president of the center, a woman named Denise. In 1994, Ari and Denise married. Eventually, Ari started working for another business owned by his father. This one involved home health care. He also started his own construction company called Main Beam Construction. As a hobby, Ari maintained an intense interest in diesel pickup trucks. He would compete in various racing and pulling competitions. He even built a 2,300-square-foot garage attached to his house to work on trucks. In 2005, Ari was arrested for perpetrating a $2.3 million Medicare fraud scheme from 1998 to 2001. In 2007, he pleaded guilty. His fine, restitution, and legal fees totaled almost $400,000. Instead of prison, Ari was placed on 6 months of house arrest, which allowed him to leave his house for work-related purposes. At this point, he was focused on his construction business. In 2008, the housing crisis did not leave much construction work available. Ari's business ran into severe financial difficulty, and he was plagued by debt on a condominium complex he owned in Florida. By this time, Denise was working as an adjunct professor at a local university. Her income was pretty much all the couple had. Ari desperately searched for some way to alleviate the tremendous financial pressure. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On Saturday, February 23, 2008, at 8:25 a.m., Ari's wife Denise called 911 and said, quote, "I think my garage is on fire. I was hearing all this noise, and I went to open the door, and it's all black smoke," unquote. When police and firefighters arrived, they found the body of a man crushed under a Chevrolet Silverado pickup truck in Ari's garage. Initially, they assumed the body belonged to Ari, but they did not know that for sure. Denise told the police that her marriage with Ari was not good. She said, "Ari is not one for conversation." The couple was not involved in each other's lives. Rather, they had a business relationship. They slept in separate bedrooms. The cold marriage that Denise described was supported by the absence of any photographs of the couple in their home. On that day, Saturday, Denise heard three large booms coming from the garage, which is how she discovered the fire. The police asked Denise if Ari had a life insurance policy. She told them she was not aware of one. Investigators developed an initial theory about what happened. Ari decided to change the fuel filter on his modified Chevrolet Silverado pickup truck. He lifted the truck with a 3-ton jack and climbed under it. While he was working on it, the truck slipped off the jack and crushed his chest, killing him. The truck also broke a work light that Ari was using. It ignited some diesel fuel that had spilled out of the fuel filter. As the investigation continued, the police developed doubts about this initial theory. For example, Ari was an experienced and safety-conscious mechanic, yet he was not using jack stands. He relied solely on the jack to support the weight of the truck. Even though Ari was changing the fuel filter, the front wheels of the vehicle had been removed. There was no need to do this. The filter could have been easily accessed with the wheels attached. The 3-ton hydraulic jack had been positioned between the radiator and the front bumper. Why would an experienced mechanic do that? If the truck slipped off the jack, there should have been scratches underneath the truck, but there were none. The ignition source for the diesel fuel was supposed to be the broken light bulb, but the electricity to the garage was turned off prior to the fire. Cardboard was positioned on top of the body. A propane torch was nearby. It was set to the on position. The body was drenched in diesel fuel. It had soaked through articles of clothing like the underwear and the boots. More diesel had been on the body than would have been spilled during the change of a fuel filter. In addition, there was gasoline on the body. Why would Ari have gasoline on him if he was working on a truck with a diesel engine? The police wondered if Denise could have been involved, like maybe she killed Ari. After all, their marriage was in bad shape. To help identify the body, the police asked Denise how many tattoos Ari had. She responded that she was not sure. Either Denise was lying, or she had not been paying attention during their 14-year marriage. As investigators were still trying to identify the body, Denise expressed an intense interest in getting the body for cremation. She was upset and said that Ari needed to be cremated as soon as possible for a celebration of life ceremony. Later, the police discovered that Ari had a $5 million life insurance policy. $4 million would go to Denise. The other million would go to a close friend of Ari's who had been ruled out as a potential suspect. The policy had been issued in August 1999. It was hard to believe that Denise was not aware of the policy's existence. As if this wasn't strange enough, investigators would soon face another major twist in this case. An autopsy revealed that the teeth in the body that was found in Ari's garage did not match his dental records. They appeared to be from someone in their 20s. At around the time of this discovery, the police received a report of a missing person who may have been connected to the case. On February 23, 2008, the day of the fire, a 20-year-old Arlington Heights man named Justin Newman went missing. He worked at the Home Depot in Lake Zurich, a store that Ari visited frequently. Ari had approached Justin and offered him $15 an hour to work for him. Justin was excited about this because he only made $10 an hour at Home Depot. The first day of work was supposed to be Saturday, February 23. That morning, Justin left his home in his half-brother's red 1999 Pontiac Sunfire and drove to Ari's house. He was never seen again, and the car was missing. Not long after this, Justin's mother received a text message from his phone. The message read, "Going to Missouri to work, call you next week." She did not believe this message came from Justin because the word Missouri was abbreviated M-O, and Justin would not have known that. The police wondered if the dead man in Ari's garage was Justin Newman. They collected DNA from his toothbrush for a comparison, but it would be a few days before the test results were available. As they waited for the results, the police visited the Home Depot store and spoke with Justin's coworkers. One coworker, a man named Sandy Lively, had an interesting story to tell about his interactions with Ari. He said that Ari offered him a job, which would pay $60,000 in the first year. Sandy was interested, so Ari gave him an application to complete. The form requested information that seemed out of the ordinary. For example, a description of tattoos and piercings, his mother's maiden name, his eye color, and personal identification numbers for his ATM cards. Sandy told Ari he was no longer interested, but Ari kept hounding him about taking the job. Eventually, Sandy agreed and arranged to call Ari at 6 a.m. on February 23, the day of the fire. During that call, Ari was going to tell him where to meet, and they would go to work together. As it turns out, Sandy overslept on Saturday and did not call Ari as planned. Getting that extra sleep might have saved Sandy's life. The police noticed there was an uncanny resemblance between Sandy and Ari. In the time leading up to the fire, Ari grew a beard, which made him look even more like Sandy. This information allowed the police to form an updated theory of the incident. They believed that Ari faked his own death. His first plan was to kill Sandy because the men looked so much alike, but when Sandy failed to call as scheduled, Ari switched to his backup target, Justin Newman. When Justin showed up at his house ready to work, Ari incapacitated him somehow. He switched clothing and wallets with Justin. Ari then placed Justin under the pickup truck, crushed him by lowering the jack, dumped diesel fuel and gasoline on his body, then set Justin on fire. This theory, of course, led to another question. If Ari faked his own death, where was he? This question would be answered on March 2, 2008, when the police in Eureka, Missouri became suspicious about a red 1999 Pontiac Sunfire parked at a Days Inn. When they ran the license plate, they learned that a missing man, Justin Newman, had been driving that vehicle. The police learned that a man identifying himself as Justin Newman had rented room 133. As the police tried to gain entry into the room, they heard a single gunshot. The occupant had brought an end to his own life using a pistol. The police were able to identify the man as Ari Squire. Evidence in the hotel room supported the theory that Ari was impersonating Justin. For example, he had purchased blue contact lenses and brown hair coloring. 2 days after Ari died, the DNA results came back on the body found in his garage. Not surprisingly, it was a match to Justin Newman. Ari's wife, Denise, was never charged with a crime, and she collected millions of dollars from Ari's insurance policy. It wasn't all good news for Denise. Justin's mother, Donna, filed a wrongful death suit against her, accusing her of being in a conspiracy with Ari to murder Justin. After a civil trial in 2010, Donna was awarded $6 million. Now moving to my analysis. There is no question that Ari Squire was guilty of murder. The only mystery in this case involves his wife, Denise Squire. Some people believe that she was a conspirator and therefore guilty of murder. However, she was never charged with any crime. This brings me to the question, was Denise guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that she was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Denise said she was not aware of a life insurance policy. However, a $5 million policy was in place, with $4 million of that going to her. The couple was in financial trouble at the time of Justin's murder. For instance, Ari's construction company was headed for bankruptcy. Denise claimed that she did not know how many tattoos her husband had, even though they had been married for 14 years. She seemed incredibly anxious to get a hold of his body for cremation. A search of the house that Denise shared with Ari revealed that Denise had received multiple emails from her husband starting on Sunday, February 24, 2008. This is the day after Justin's murder. In one email, Ari wrote, "If I am no longer, please respond to this email with answered questions. The responses will then be reformatted and sent out to people I have chosen." Ari then asked a series of questions. "Did an accident happen?" Denise responded by saying yes. "Per my will, when is the party set for?" Denise responded, "Working on that now." "When will my ashes be returned to you?" Denise responded, "Body has not been released." "When are you planning on dispersing my ashes?" Denise responded, "Don't know." And, "Is there anything you need?" Denise responded, "A new life." In another email, Denise told Ari that 120 people attended his memorial banquet. The subject lines of the emails included the term automated email. Denise claimed that she believed the emails were written before Ari died, and he scheduled them to be transmitted after his death. This is almost impossible to believe. How would Ari know when he was going to die, and why would he ask those questions? One in particular stands out. "Is there anything you need?" Dead people don't have a good track record of helping others. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Ari could have told Denise that he was faking his own death without including any information about murdering Justin. No physical evidence tied Denise to the murder. There is no evidence that she ever communicated with the murder victim, Justin. And she did not really seem to be close to Ari. The relationship was cold and distant. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Denise Squire was guilty of murder? I believe she was guilty in reality, but I am not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. It makes sense that the state of Illinois did not prosecute this case. Deception was one of Ari's favorite activities. It's not hard to imagine that he lied to Denise about the nature of his plan. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Ari Squire was a convicted fraudster who had an aptitude for working on diesel engines. After getting caught for fraud, he ran into severe financial problems and was looking for a way out. He developed a bizarre scheme to fake his own death by murdering an innocent man under circumstances that made it seem as though Ari had died by accident. He would switch identities with the murder victim and leave the area. After Denise collected the insurance money, she would join him and they would start new lives together. The fact that Ari had adopted the identity of a missing person wasn't a problem because he could stay off the grid. He would never need to get a job, travel to another country, or file taxes. He and his wife could live on the money indefinitely. The plan fell apart before Denise could follow through with the later steps. This allowed her to escape criminal responsibility because there was no way to prove she knew Ari would kill Justin. In the end, she was found liable for Justin's death in civil court and continued with her life. The police have pointed out that there is no statute of limitations for murder, and Denise could theoretically face justice later. However, I believe that is unlikely. If she was guilty, Denise managed to escape justice for good. The one person who could prove her guilt, her husband, has exercised his right to remain silent permanently. Those are my thoughts on the case of Ari Squire. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.